On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Most of us have seen the terrible images from the concentration camps that operated by Nazi Germany during World War II. We've heard stories of those who survived the camps, and we've seen the pictures and heard a few accounts of the GIs who were the rescuers, the liberators of these camps. But we don't really know very much about what seeing these horrific images did for those who were the liberators, and how sometimes the grief and the anger and the shock was not just contained and forgotten, but instead became part of their life, part of their very soul, and even could be passed on to the next generation. To talk to us about grief is Lila Levinson, the author of Gated Grief. The daughter of a GI concentration camp liberator discovers a legacy of trauma, and it is from Cable Publishing. Lila, thank you so much for joining us on the Bookshelf today.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I'm glad to be here.
Now, the book is actually not just an event, but a process that you went through, really, parts of this were your life story, as well as the story of your dad, Dr. Reuben Levinson, who was one of the liberators of a smaller camp called Nordhausen.
Right.
And tell us, when you first saw these pictures, first had any idea that your dad was one of these people that came in and found these horrific images?
My dad died in 1988, and soon after his death, my brother and I went into his medical office, and we went down into the basement because I had remembered this World War II army trunk in a dark corner of the basement that had always been guarded by a Nazi helmet during my childhood.
Mm.
That Nazi helmet managed to keep us at arm's length as kids, even though it fascinated me. So I was always curious what was in the trunk itself, and as well as his captain's uniform, there was a box full of photographs. My dad had mentioned landing on Utah Beach on D-Day right behind the first wave of troops. He had mentioned even being in the Battle of the Bulge. And I did see many of the photographs showed those sorts of images of clearing stations and hospital tents and ruined churches and cemeteries. None of which particularly surprised me, but at the bottom of the box were these images of countless skeletal bodies. And I turned them over. They said Nordhausen Concentration Camp, April 1945, in my father's handwriting. And at first, I couldn't believe it. I just refused to believe that my father could have witnessed a camp and never have mentioned it to us. But an aunt soon after told me, yes, his division had liberated this camp. And as my father was a doctor, he stayed behind to treat survivors until after about 3 weeks he had a mental breakdown. And that information completely turned my understanding of my father upside down.
Now, you and your family are Jewish,
mm-hmm.
and you had certainly heard of the Holocaust, certainly learned about it. And as a matter of fact, my understanding is you had been teaching a literature class on the Holocaust, focusing on memoirs and poetry written by witnesses to the camps.
Right.
But you didn't realize that you had an even more personal connection to the camps until you found these pictures and the photographs in the footlocker.
No, I had absolutely no idea. In fact, once I realized that my father had witnessed a camp, I thought back to my childhood, my teenage years, and realized that he hadn't talked about the Holocaust at all. It wasn't until I happened to go to a movie shown at the Jewish Community Center. It was done by a Frenchman, Alain René, one of the very first movies done on the Holocaust. It was called Night and Fog. It actually had footage of Auschwitz, of the barracks, the remains of the crematorium. It had footage of people being herded into the cattle cars. I went home just almost hysterical, and my father's response was, "Don't think it can't happen here." So it was just amazing for me to realize all those years later that the reason why he never talked about it was because he had just so completely locked away tried to lock away his memories of having actually entered one of these camps himself.
His method of dealing with it was just to put it in a closet and slam the door shut and pretend that it had never happened, and to kind of compartmentalize it, which is a way that men tend to do about things that we don't want to discuss. But this was so enormous that it really wouldn't stay contained, and it poisoned certain aspects of his life. You talk in the book Gated Grief about how it stole his soul, how he ceased being a man who had any compassion or any tenderness. Those things were just obliterated by the enormity of this horror.
Right, I think that's what is so relevant about my book for our situation today, where we have so many veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan with horrific memories, maybe different sorts of horrors, but horrors nonetheless, that when people feel like they have no other option but to lock away these memories so they can get on with their lives, so that they can protect their children from these horrors, they feel like they have to lock them away. We don't realize that even though World War II GIs were celebrated at the end of the war, that they still didn't have a place to go with their stories. Nobody wanted to hear about it. Every veteran I spoke to said, I had to go silent because my family didn't want to hear about it, my friends didn't want to hear about it, everybody just wanted to get on with their lives. And there was very little available to World War II GIs in terms of therapy or counseling. So they felt they had no choice but to lock it up. And veterans returning from Vietnam, they certainly felt like they had to lock it up. Veterans returning today, we are much more accepting and aware of PTSD today, but it's very difficult still for veterans to access meaningful, you know, emotional, psychological support. And so many of them also feel like they have to go silent. What I found in the over 80 veterans who had also helped to liberate the camps, I found an amazing common pattern among them, that they were all still very much in the grip of the trauma, still haven't told their children, very few of their spouses know, because the thing is, once you start being silent about a huge experience in your life, it becomes very difficult to reverse that path, to figure a way how to start talking about it. And they are still struggling. And I actually, my coming to their homes and asking them questions became a very cathartic, liberating experience for them, because I gave them sort of a ladder out of their silence. And I became I think one reason they were willing to talk to me and open up to the pain was because they realized I was giving them a way to break out of their silence and to start enabling communication with their own children.
Now, certainly it would be understandably horrible enough if you were a Gentile GI going in there and seeing these things. You'd heard rumors about them, but you couldn't really believe it because they were so awful. And then to walk into these camps and see man's inhumanity to man. But even worse would be if you were Jewish, because as one of your interviewers said, you know, therefore the grace of God went I. What if my grandparents hadn't left the old country 50 years earlier? Then I might be in this horrible shape, or my immediate family might be. And even so, the possibilities were good, because we are a nation of immigrants and people have been coming here from all places for a long time, but especially over the last 100 years or so from Eastern Europe. Then certainly there would be relatives of yours who vanished in these concentration camps, these death camps. I would think emotionally that would be, I don't know if it could be more overburdening, but it seemed that would make it even worse.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I started wondering about. Was there a different type of trauma for the Jewish liberators than for the non-Jewish? And while every single non-Jewish liberator I met was also deeply horrified and traumatized, and many of them just as locked up in their silence as the Jewish men and women, there was a different aspect of it for the Jews, because as you say, so many of them realized they could easily have been lying there in these piles also. Most of their parents had emigrated from Eastern Europe just 30 years before. And so they did have an identification, and I think they had a pattern of their faith being very, very tested, if not undermined. Many of these people had a difficult time believing in a God after witnessing the camps, even while at the same time they became fierce about raising their children Jewish. which explained this huge tension I experienced growing up between my father insisting on us going to Hebrew school and getting bar and bat mitzvah, even while at the same time I didn't see him showing any faith at all. So I do think there was a little bit of a difference in the nature of the trauma itself between the Jewish and the non-Jews. But I have to say, you know, there wasn't any difference in terms of the silence that all of these veterans lived out in their families and the type of depression and melancholy. And that's one thing that I'd really like to emphasize. The way the media represents PTSD nowadays, we think of it as manifesting itself in tremendous anger, maybe even violence, a lot of alcoholism, other substance abuse, maybe even homelessness. We don't think of it manifesting itself in silence, in depression, and melancholy. And I do believe that as serious a display of trauma as the, you know, the more typically recognized form.
Well, that doesn't make as exciting a TV show or a movie, does it?
No, you're right. You're right. But in many ways, it makes it a lot more confusing for the family members because it can certainly remove that veteran from being involved in the family, you know, and it can deeply affect the children's own emotional development. And so we have this cycle in our culture, I think, because if we think about it, in America's history, we have never gone more than a generation without a war.
Yeah.
And so we, in fact, the sons of World War II GIs, those were the people who went to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And so if we think about it, we've all grown up in the shadow of war in our own homes. And I think it's time to start recognizing how that has shaped us, what the consequences of that is for us.
My late father-in-law was in Europe during World War II, as far as we know, did not get near any of the concentration camps, but was a combat vet in Italy and in North Africa, and was a very gentle man. My wife says when she was a little girl that she remembers distinctly him waking up in the night shrieking and screaming, and that it went on for years. And by the time she got to high school, it had pretty much eased off, but that he never, ever, ever talked about being in the war, other than the fact that he was, to his daughter or his son. And the only time he really started talking about his service was when we had kids, and my kids would go to him and say, you know, what'd you do in the war, Grandpa? We're studying World War II. And I'm a history buff, so I might read a book about, you know, the conditions of the boots in World War II for the American GIs or something like that. And I would comment to him about it, and he said, yeah, that was the worst part about being in the war. He said the worst thing, worse than being shot at all the time, was the fact that your feet were wet all the time, and you always had fungus,
mm-hmm.
and it was miserable. He said you could never, never, ever be dry, even in the summer. Your feet were always miserable, and we were always afraid our feet were going to rot off. And
yeah, in fact, I think like at the Battle of the Bulge, they lost more troops to foot rot or whatever it was called than to bullets.
Yeah, and to frostbite, because the boots were so terrible. They were all jealous of the paratroopers because the paratroopers had really good boots.
Mm-hmm. And what you're bringing up is actually one of the things that I hope people start realizing after reading Gated Grief is that we don't realize how all these World War II GIs were carrying so much inside their silence. Because if you ask any of us baby boomers who of our fathers talked about the war, I don't think anybody's did, really,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And like your father-in-law, they'd actually tell more to their grandchildren than they would to their own children.
Yeah.
How he had nightmares, that's just really, really classic. I hear that from so many people, that was the one telltale thing in their homes, that their fathers did not come home from war unscathed, you know?
I
think it would be interesting for baby boomers to start wondering, gee, how did my dad's World War II experience affect him? What about my family growing up was a manifestation of his trauma from war, and how did it shape me?
Well, now, you have a website, veteranschildren.com, where veterans and their children are invited to share your stories. And So that's a wonderful opportunity. I mean, if you don't want to open the dialogue by speaking with other people face to face, there's a chance for you to do so with a certain level of separation, which might make it easier. And now I know in this area in Southeast Alabama is extremely patriotic. So we always have a huge number of people who volunteer for every conflict, and there were huge, way proportionally high number of people who volunteered for World War II and every war since then. Even Korea, we had volunteers, and lots in Vietnam, and all of the people that I've met here since I've moved here who served in Nam, they never, ever, ever talk about combat. And to a certain extent, they say, well, you can't really explain it to somebody who wasn't there. I understand that, but what was your experience like? What was the most horrible day you ever had, and what was the most amazing day you ever had? You know, if you start out like you did when you interview people, you ask them a question, then hush and let them talk.
Right, and I just came from a retreat last week outside of Atlanta with some veterans from Vietnam and from Iraq and Afghanistan, and it was amazing how over the course of 3 days, once they realized that we really wanted to hear their stories, and not in any kind of voyeuristic way, but truly to be present for them and to help them heal, how they opened up and shared some horrific memories that they have carried either for, you know, 40 years in the case of the Vietnam vets or a few years in the case of the younger ones. And once they saw that we really wanted to hear their stories and they opened up, it was amazing the transformation that took place from not carrying those memories just by themselves inside. And I do believe that we all have a responsibility to our troops to be present for them, to hear their stories, because it is extremely healing to share them and to not see them as just your own isolated experience, but that these are universal experiences, that it wasn't just you who suffered or who had the reaction you did, that many other troops, you know, have those same exact responses. So I really think that right now it's very important for communities to come together and support their veterans and let them know that they want to hear. They don't want them to feel like they have no other choice but to lock these stories up inside of themselves. And that is why I created that website, Veterans Children, because so many of the children of the veterans I interviewed, once they read my manuscript, they told me it made a huge difference for their families to know what their fathers had been holding inside their silence. And now they've come together, and there's more intimacy and closeness. So I want people to understand that when there's been an estrangement, when there's been alcoholism or divorce or any difficult type of family tension, that oftentimes we don't understand what's really at work behind it, and that there are often deep wounds from the traumas of war. So Veterans Children is there to give people a way to share their stories, to realize how much they have in common with other children of veterans, and to realize there's a way, there's a path there available to us for forgiveness and understanding.
Yeah, the tough thing about the whole silent treatment is, if you, especially for the guys coming out of World War II, when the whole ethos was we're manly men and we don't cry and we don't mourn, whenever you're in the military, you pretty much have to adopt that kind of persona, because if you start thinking about it in the middle of it, you can't continue to fulfill your mission.
Right.
So, but the bad side of that is, when you get back, if you don't ever talk about it, you do start to think, well, everybody else is doing okay. I must be the only one that's upset about this, so I don't want anybody to think I'm some kind of wimp or something, so I'm just never going to say a thing about it.
Right, and many of the veterans I've spoken with of all ages have said, you know, the military does a great job of training us to become warriors and to go off to war. They do a lousy job of bringing us back home. Nowadays, veterans, a man or a woman can be deployed in Afghanistan, and at the end of their deployment, within 17 hours, they're back in their home again with their 2-year-old and their 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So what do they feel like they can do? They don't, you know, they don't want to start talking about their experiences. So we really need to find a process for enabling a recently returning soldier to have the space and the support and the community that allows them to decompress and process their experience and figure out what they can say, how to talk about it, what they can say to their kids, how to talk about it to their kids. We just don't do that at all.
We're talking today to Lila Levinson, who is the author of Gated Grief, The Daughter of a GI Concentration Camp Liberator Discovers a Legacy of Trauma. It's from Cable Publishing. And once again, her website is veteranschildren.com. That's for veterans and their children, where you are invited to share stories. Part of what makes this book so very poignant is the fact that you're painfully honest in it, and you tell about how you have struggled with depression your whole life, and that is because you had two incredibly traumatic events that were related to your mother, which led to your being taken away from her, and her being taken away from you. She just vanished, and you didn't know about her, didn't know what happened to her. Over a decade, it's tough enough to lose your mom, but to have it under these kind of circumstances was horrific. And what exacerbated that was the fact that your dad, having come back from the war and numbing himself to contain this trauma, was not able to explain things to you or to reach out to you and help you to deal with your loss.
Right. That was one of the windows that finding my father's photographs opened up for me. I had never been able to understand after I last saw my mother when I was five, until through my 20s, why my father was so completely unable to talk about her to me, to explain to me what had happened to her, to recognize my grief and enable my brothers and me to express our feelings. And so when I learned he had witnessed a camp, and then set out to meet other liberators so they might explain to me what happened inside of themselves internally after they witnessed the camp. They really enabled me to understand my father's response to my mother's alcoholism and mental illness, that why he was so completely unable to acknowledge our grief. I mean, my childhood is eerily like the movie Shutter Island, which was out last year with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, yes.
And it amazed me that Dennis Lehane, the author of the book, knew that story. He supposedly woke up one night and had this dream and immediately went over and wrote the whole dream down, and that became the book, which then became the movie.
Hmm.
My own life story is not that very different from what happens in that movie.
No.
Just the mother's just slightly worse off than my mother, I think, was.
Yeah.
So I don't think as dramatic and extreme as my story seems of having lost my mother, not having known what happened to her. Really, many people read my book and they want to know, well, what did happen to your mother? And I tell them I wish I could answer that because I never did get the answer.
Hmm.
But it's not really that unusual in terms of the consequences of a veteran coming home from war with great trauma and then having a spouse who might have some issue of her own, whether it's being bipolar or having a pull to depression, or maybe she already has some alcoholism going on. Things that are not that uncommon, you know, if we think about it, among our friends and neighbors. And the combination of the veteran's trauma and then the spouse's own challenges can be just devastating when they come together in a family. So I think I realized I needed to be courageous and write about my own life as an example of what happens, what is the result of this bad mix of a veteran's trauma after war with in a bad family dynamic, how that can really have terrible consequences for the children over decades.
It was just a double whammy for you, especially being a little girl, and it didn't seem to be as difficult for your brothers because they were older. They had some good memories of your mom, but you had very little about her except these awful events.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that it was actually any better for them. I think sometimes when you have good memories of a parent and you watch them absolutely disintegrate and deteriorate, I think it actually creates maybe even more anger and pain. And one thing I have learned in life is it's really impossible to compare our pain. You know, I think every person has a different threshold for how much pain or suffering they can tolerate in their lives without it sort of sending them over the edge, you know, or just making them feel like Job who's just been tested too much. But I just know that no child should have to endure you know, losing a parent and not receiving any explanations, that no child, every child deserves an opportunity to experience the full range of life's emotions, to observe their parents experiencing grief and experiencing joy, because you can't just choose which emotion to have, right? We have to be open to all the emotions that the human being is susceptible to. I think every child needs to grow up in a home where they observe the parents responding to emotions with resiliency. And that's the one thing that I think we need to begin to value more, and to realize we need to facilitate that in people who we send off to war in our name. The least we owe to them is to do everything we can to heal them when they return, because it's not just them who will suffer, it's also their children.
A lot of the book is really, really interesting, and some of the people that you interviewed, I wish we had an hour to go, because I'd love to talk about Kay Bonnerny and some of the others that you talked to specifically. We'll just leave that for people to get a copy of the book and read for themselves. But the people that you interview and their take on things, their stories, their horror at the unimaginable thing that they discover, and how it affected the rest of their life. Like you say, it's just a startling mirror into the soul of anybody who's ever been in combat, because it's never like it is in the movies. No matter how bad the movies make it, that can never reflect it. One of the things, a couple of years ago, the movie Saving Private Ryan came out. A combat veteran friend of mine who was seriously injured in the Battle of the Bulge called me and warned me about watching it, because I had never been in combat. And he said, it's going to be awful. And I said, well, how accurate was it? You've seen the screening. He said, they got everything but the smell. He said, but
the smell.
When I read in this, and that was one of the things that they mentioned, when they got close to the place, they were overwhelmed by the ash on the leaves and by this horrific smell, something so awful that they had never smelled anything like it before.
Yeah.
And I thought about my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember a couple of the veterans saying, no war movie will ever give people an understanding of what war is, because it cannot convey smell. Yeah, and in fact, that's a lot of what I heard from the veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, saying the same thing, that it's the smell that they just absolutely cannot forget. Mm. And I just have to say that I needed to dedicate the book to my father, and I certainly acknowledge the other veterans at the end of the book, but in my heart, it's also just as much their book as it is mine. These men and women were so generous and so humble. And even though I think Tom Brokaw's label for World War II GIs is the greatest generation, I think on some level that has been a burden to them.
Mm-hmm.
It has made it harder for them to voice their pain and trauma. But on the other hand, I realize that these are an amazing generation of people, and I just am so grateful to them for having opened their doors to me and shared such amazing stories and such deep pain with me. It was very, very humbling.
Well, Lila, you certainly did an incredible amount of research for this book, even going back 5 years ago to Germany, to Mittelbau Dora, which is what the Germans call Nordhausen, and all that's in the book and more. And I think it's a remarkable testimony and a cautionary tale about how we treat our warriors, a testament to the human spirit that managed to survive such things but never survives them intact. And I think you've done a wonderful job in reminding us that we need to be more intentional about helping those men and women who stand between us, destruction and death, and thank them by listening to their stories.
Yes. Well, thank you, Dave, for those words. And that is the one thing I truly hope people take away, is that we owe it to our veterans to listen.
Lila Levinson, the author of Gated Grief, the daughter of a GI concentration camp liberator, discovers a legacy of trauma. It's from Cable Publishing, and don't forget her website for veterans and their children, veteranschildren.com. Lila, thank you so much for being with us today on The Bookshelf.
Thank you, Dave. I enjoyed talking with you.
Our special thanks to Lila Levinson for joining us today on The Bookshelf. We'll see you next Sunday morning at 9:30 on FM 94.7, Sunday afternoon at 2:30 on AM 970, and our website, WTBF.com. You can also listen to this show on my website, onthebookshelf.biz, B-I-Z. Thanks so much for listening, and remember what Lila reminds us to do, and that is to thank our veterans by listening to the stories they have to tell. Till next week, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.